This is VOA News, reporting via remote. I'm Jeff Custer. Ukraine's fortunes in defending the eastern city of Severodonetsk took a turn for the worse Wednesday, with its troops forced to retreat to the outskirts of the eastern industrial city in the face of a fierce Russian attack. Days ago, Ukrainian forces launched a counteroffensive that recaptured nearly half of the city, but Luhansk regional governor Sergei Haidai told the RBC Ukraine media outlet that when Russia started flattening the city with shelling and airstrikes, it made no sense to stay. Haidai said Ukrainian forces now again control only the outskirts of the city, but adding that as the fighting continues, and said it is impossible to say the Russians completely control Severodonetsk. Meanwhile, the consequences of the war have been felt in many countries and throughout the world. The conflict prompted the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development Wednesday to present a dim economic projection for the rest of the year. Associated Press correspondent Charles de Ledesma reports.
The White House says it's trying to come up with money to...
The OECD has slashed its global economic outlook, largely as a result of the Russia-Ukraine war. The Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development says Russia's war in Ukraine and the energy and food crises it's worsened will severely drag down global economic growth and push inflation this year. The Paris-based group says China's zero-COVID policy that has scrambled manufacturing supply chains also is weighing on a world economy that was starting to rebound from the COVID-19 pandemic. The OECD is the latest institution to slash its growth forecast, underscoring the dimming economic outlook. I'm Charles de Ledesma.
This is VOA News. At United Nations headquarters in New York Wednesday, China and Russia were called to explain to the international community why they vetoed a UN Security Council resolution calling for new sanctions on North Korea for its recent string of prohibited long-range and ballistic missile tests. Wednesday was the first time the General Assembly implemented its April 25th resolution requiring any of the five permanent members of the powerful Security Council to explain their actions to the wider UN membership when they exercise the use of their veto. The Council includes Britain, China, France, Russia, and the United States. Envoys from both Russia and China shifted the blame to the U.S., saying Washington pushed for the May 26th Council vote on sanctions, which the two nations did not believe were warranted. China said the sanctions were harsh and inhumane, and while North Korea took denuclearization measures in 2018, the U.S. has not. And in China's view, the U.S. has not demonstrated sincerity in resolving the issue. Russia said it is futile to expect North Korea to disarm under the threat of spiraling sanctions. North Korea said it carries out missile tests on a regular basis to exercise its legitimate right to self-defense. The White House announced it is diverting more than $10 billion in COVID-19 relief funds from orders of at-home rapid tests and other pandemic-related efforts. Associated Press correspondent Ben Thomas reports.
The White House says it's trying to come up with money to secure the next generation of vaccines and treatments for high-risk Americans, but it's facing a funding crunch because Congress has not acted on the president's request. Negotiations broke down in March over Biden's plans to end pandemic-related health restrictions at the border. In addition to cutting back on orders of at-home rapid tests, the administration is also scaling back funding for research and development of new COVID-19 vaccines and limiting orders of personal protective equipment as it tries to maintain stockpiles of vaccines and treatments heading into the winter. Ben Thomas, Washington.
U.S. Attorney General Merrick Garland said Wednesday an ongoing Justice Department review of the police responses to the recent school massacre in Texas will examine what went wrong in response to the tragic event. The May 24th shooting at the Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, left 19 children and two teachers dead and more than a dozen other people injured. It was the deadliest U.S. school shooting in a decade. In comments to reporters Wednesday, Garland said nothing can undo the pain that's been inflicted on the loved ones of the victims, the survivors, and the entire community of Uvalde. But he said the Justice Department can and will use its expertise and independence to assess what happened and provide guidance moving forward. Repeating the hour's top story, Ukraine's fortunes in defending the eastern city of Severodonetsk took a turn for the worse Wednesday, with its troops forced to retreat to the outskirts of the eastern industrial city. Reporting via remote, I'm Jeff Custer. This is VOA News.
This This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight.
And it's a moment of lucidity that reminds us that we must build a common future on win-win projects.
That's Jean-Jacques Lumumba offering a message to the Belgian people. He is the grandson of Patrice Lumumba, the first president of the Democratic Republic of Congo. Details coming up. Also, we will look into the extradition case for Mozambique's former finance minister. We have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. We start with our top story. Nigeria's ruling party, the All Progressive Congress, APC, today picked former Lagos State Governor Bola Tinubu as its candidate to run for president in elections scheduled for February 2023. President Muhammadu Buhari steps down next year after serving the maximum 8 years allowed by the Constitution. Tinubu captured more than 1,000 votes, defeating former Minister of Transportation Rotimi Amaechi, who had 316. Vice President Yemi Osinbajo was third with 235 votes. Tinubu supporters portray him as an effective administrator with a knack for hiring committed technocrats to get jobs done. Critics say he doled out lucrative contracts and plumed jobs to his friends. Tinubu rejects that description. His main opponent will be Atiku Abubakar, representing the People's Democratic Party. Christopher Isiki is professor of African politics and international relations at the University of Pretoria in South Africa. He also is the president of the African Association of Political Science. Professor Isiki spoke with reporter Mike Mbonye about the APC primaries and starts by saying he thinks the party could have chosen a better candidate.
You know, it's sad that the APC would choose such a candidate over the likes of Yemi Osinbajo or even Dr. Onu, who are more qualified, in my view, in terms of competence, in terms of something to offer the country, especially given where we are in the country right now, in terms of the clamor for the Southeast to produce the presidency of the country. One would have expected that if the party really listened, as the northern governors were magnanimous enough to cede to the south, one would have expected that those in the south would have also had a meeting to try and cede to the southeast, who have never produced, the presidency in the history of the country. So that's what's sad. The fact that was not given any concession, and the fact that a candidate who, in my view, is not qualified to be president of the country at all, just to get the ticket.
Nigeria's presidential election has been scheduled for February 2023. And from the look of things, it's going to be Bola Tinubu of the All Progressives Congress, the ruling All Progressives Congress, versus Atiku Abubakar, former vice president and the presidential candidate of the main opposition party, the People's Democratic Party. What's your take? How do you see that election?
Well, it's problematic when that assuming that there are two main political parties. And so you have already considered the race to the two, which in my view is problematic because the power that these two political parties are, which in my view actually are one political party, one and the same political party. You have the same characters, you know, moving back and forth within the two, and you know, so for me they are the same party. But even if you say they are two different parties, the power that they have as the two main parties that you, a journalist, is even acceding to them, is exactly the power that has been given to them by the people of Nigeria. It's not a real power that they have on the ground in terms of belief, in terms of legitimacy in the eyes of the people. So there are alternatives. I don't think that it's going to be solely between Atiku Abubakar and Bola Tinubu. This is a narrative that they want us to believe. And I'm saying that we as Nigerians don't have to accept it. We don't have to believe it. We need to just simply take back that recognition and that power and that legitimacy that they have and grant it to someone else, and it's possible. So I think that someone like Peter Obi is still very much in the mix, although he's very popular on social media. I think that if that support is transferred to people on the ground, people who have PVCs voting, I think that it will be a good contender. It could give them a good run for their money. Atiku Abubakar and Bola Tinubu.
And that was Christopher Isiki, a professor of African politics and international relationship at the University of Pretoria. He spoke to reporter Mike Mbonye by phone from Pretoria. Today, Algeria has suspended a cooperation treaty with Spain after Madrid reversed its decades-long stance of neutrality on the Western Sahara conflict. Spain, in March, publicly recognized Morocco's autonomy plan for the disputed territory to end a diplomatic spat with the kingdom, Algeria's arch rival. Rabat controls 80% of the Western Sahara. Spain today expressed regret over Algeria's decision on their cooperation treaty. In April, the Algerian-backed Polisario Front, Western Sahara's independence movement, said it was cutting ties with Spain after Madrid backed Morocco's plan, giving autonomy to the former Spanish colony. As pressure mounts for South Africa's President Cyril Ramaphosa to step aside following allegations around a theft at his game farm in 2020, the Economic Freedom Fighters, EFF, opposition party, has vowed not to allow him to address Parliament Thursday. Ramaphosa is scheduled to be in Parliament ahead of the budget vote, but the EFF says that should not happen while he is facing criminal charges. Tuso Kumalo reports from Johannesburg.
If the threats of Economic Freedom Fighters party leader Julius Malema are anything to go by, then Parliament is set to experience serious disruptions Thursday. The party wants President Cyril Ramaphosa to step aside after former State Security Director General Arthur Fraser opened a case of money laundering, kidnapping and corruption against him. Fraser alleges that Ramaphosa concealed the theft of $4 million from his farm. He also says the thieves were caught, kidnapped, and interrogated. Then the money was recovered from them and they were paid to keep quiet. Malema told a media briefing that Ramaphosa must go to the police station to explain himself, not to Parliament.
He must leave the office with immediate effect because he has not respected his oath of office. Everywhere and anywhere where we find Ramaphosa or we see Ramaphosa and we have an opportunity to stop him from speaking in the name of South Africa, we will do so.
Other opposition parties have also exerted pressure on Parliament to act on the matter. The African Transformation Movement Party has written to Parliament to institute an inquiry into whether Ramaphosa broke the law in any way. The United Democratic Movement Party also approached Parliament to set up an inquiry led by a retired constitutional court judge. But the Speaker of Parliament, Nosiviwe Mapisa-Nqakula, told members during a budget vote on Tuesday that there should be caution in starting parallel processes to a case already under police investigation.
He said he is available. He is ready to cooperate with the law enforcement agencies. I think he should also be given that opportunity to do that. On the side of Parliament, once clear legal advice comes out as to what processes we should embark upon, we will then embark upon those processes.
President Ramaphosa this week told supporters of his African National Congress party that the money in question belonged to him and was not state funds. He said the money came from selling game and cattle at the farm. He also said he will cooperate fully with police, saying his hands are clean. However, his critics want to know the legality of keeping such an amount on private property, whether the money was taxed, and why the robbery was not reported. Tuso Kumalo for VOA News, Johannesburg.
Tunisian lawyers and judges have held a small protest outside the capital's courts as part of their week-long strike over the president's dismissal of 57 judges. President Kais Saied's removal of the judges was the latest sign of growing interference in the judiciary as he tightens his grip on power. The Associated Press reports that dozens of lawyers and activists gathered today on the steps of the Palace of Justice in Tunis to denounce Saied's actions, which include ditching Tunisia's 2014 constitution to rule instead by decree. Some shouted, "Down with the coup," and others chanted, "Judicial authority, no police orders." You're listening to African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyes Wuhib in Washington. To all our listeners, we have moved our programs from voanews.com to voaafrica.com. There, you'll find all your favorite VOA radio and TV programs and a whole lot more. Find us on voaafrica.com. Belgium's King Philip has given an award to the last known surviving Congolese veteran of World War II. The Belgian King and Queen are making a six-day visit to the Democratic Republic of Congo amid ongoing efforts to atone for colonial abuses. After the event today at the Veterans Memorial in Kinshasa, King Philip addressed Congo's parliament, urging peace in the country's volatile east. The King reaffirmed his deepest regrets for the exploitation, racism and acts of violence during his country's colonization of the DRC, but again stopped short of formally apologizing. Philip became the first Belgian official 2 years ago to express regret for colonization, and some Congolese hoped he would issue a formal apology during his first visit to Congo since taking the throne in 2013. Earlier, I spoke with Jean-Jacques Lumumba, the grandson of Patrice Lumumba, the first president of the DRC after independence.
You say the King came to reaffirm his regret expressed in 2020 on the colonial past, which is a good thing, but doesn't call into question the opportunity of restorative justice between the two peoples to heal the wounds of our past.
The remains, like according to news reports, is that the King is bringing back the teeth. Tell me a little more about that.
I cannot speak on behalf of the Lumumba family not having this quality of head of family, but I can speak on my own behalf and give you my opinion. It's, for me, the beginning of another era, which should make it possible to render justice to the Congolese people, because Patrice Lumumba, Paulo and the people were the authority, and Lumumba was the first prime minister. It's to render justice to the Congolese people for this human act and to repair all injustice committed at whole level, because without justice, no lasting peace is possible.
If I told you to give a message to the King because he did this, what would you say?
My message for the King is one of brotherhood and solidarity in truth, and justice and the bright common future.
Okay. Anything else you'd like to add?
Anything I want to tell at Belgian people, we are a friendly people with whom we must build bridges and win-win partnership, like our ambition of Congo to be a power in several areas, given our strategic position and our natural resources in the agricultural fields, educational, cultural, scientific, and technological. And is a message I can give in Belgian people. And it's a moment of lucidity that reminds us that we must build a common future on win-win project, and the need for the Congo to build a serious state toward effective justice and a Republican army, and because we must fight against corruption.
And that was Jean-Jacques Lumumba, the grandson of the late Patrice Lumumba. He spoke to me from Paris. A South African court says Manuel Chang, the former Mozambique finance minister, should be extradited from South Africa to the United States to face charges related to his role in a $2 billion sovereign debt scandal. South Africa's constitutional court, the highest in the country, on Tuesday dismissed an application by Mozambique's government to appeal a November 2021 high court order that Chang be extradited to the U.S. He's been in custody in a prison near Johannesburg since his arrest in December 2018 on a U.S. warrant. VOA's Douglas Mpuga reached Borges Namir, a researcher for the Center for Public Integrity in Maputo, and they began their discussion by talking about the significance of the ruling.
Well, it means that Mozambique has lost one more battle in this struggle to try to bring Chang to Mozambique. This is not the end of the case, of course. There's still pending a decision by the Supreme Court whether Mozambique can or no appeal against the decision taken last November. But this is very bad for Mozambique, because Mozambique wanted to have a kind of shortcut, if you may allow me to use that expression, to submit appeal to the Constitutional Court. And basically, it will be funded in the human rights of Mr. Chang, who is staying in the prison now, who is under custody for more than 3 years. So with that rejection, it means Mozambique will have to wait for the decision from the Supreme Court.
Why is Mozambique so interested in having Mr. Chang tried in Mozambique and not the USA?
I understand why Mozambique is so interested to bring Chang back. Chang was the Minister of the Finance for the last for 10 years. So having him tried abroad, that's not comfortable to the government, of course. I think non-government in the world would like to have its former Minister of Finance tried abroad. I think that is reasonable. But the point is that while Chang was in Mozambique, he was not, he was not made definite. So he was free here, was his excellence. So Mozambique didn't want to follow this case. Only when the United States started the case, arrested Chang, now Mozambique is going behind. So I think Mozambique is not correct by doing that. But okay, I understand, as I said, that the government will want to prevent it to having his Minister of Finance tried in the United States. I think they are fearing that Chang might reveal more and more information that the other way could not be, otherwise could not be revealed if he's in Mozambique.
And what do you think that means for the relationship between Mozambique and the United States and South Africa?
I think the relationship between the two countries are very good. And it's important that the institutions which are taking the decision so far are not government institutions, but the justice, and the justice is independent. So I think it won't affect at all the relationship between the two countries. South Africa can tell Mozambique, look, we did enough. Our two ministers of justice signed a extradition to Mr. Chang to Mozambique, but then the court denied. And then it's a court decision. It's a court decision. What can we do? So here we wait to see what the United States will do. If the United States will withdraw the application to extradite Mr. Chang to the United States, or will maintain it. So let's see what happens. But I think it is not going to affect the relationship, which are further more than just the Chang case.
And finally, if Mr. Chang is extradited to the United States, what would happen to the other 19 suspects who are held in Mozambique?
I think the case are independent. So as you may know, the other 19 in Mozambique have been already tried while Chang is in South Africa. So it doesn't affect neither positively or negatively the case ongoing in Mozambique. So as you know, crime is individual. So Chang in the United States or in South Africa, the case continues in Mozambique. Well, what I really expect if he is extradited to the United States is that he can reveal more and more information. But if you look, you will see that good part of the information that we know here in Mozambique about this case, it came from a United States trial of Jambusani. So I think for access to information, for Mozambican to know how this scandal has been planned, how this scandal has been, you know, how this scam has been designed, it's important to Chang to be tried in independent justice like the United States. In Mozambique, I do expect more.
That was Borges Nahamir, a researcher for the Center for Public Integrity in Maputo, speaking with my colleague Douglas Mpuga. Cameroon's military says it has arrested four of its troops for the killing of nine civilians, including four women and a baby. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Cameroon's capital, Yaoundé.
Cameroon's military says the troops were deployed in the northwest village of Misong on June 1 to search for their missing colleague. A military statement Tuesday night said villagers were deviant in their behavior toward the troops, who then fired on the unarmed civilians. The rare statement of military wrongdoing said the troops killed four women, four men, and an 18-month-old girl, while a 12-year-old was injured. Relatives of the victims, who did not want to be identified for fear of retaliation, told VOA the troops got angry when the villagers refused to help them find their missing colleague. They said the troops were demanding villagers show them rebel hideouts, which they were afraid to do for fear of rebel payback. Tamfu Richard is a human rights lawyer and member of the Cameroon Bar Council. He notes it is not the first time the military has arrested troops for atrocities and that victims are still waiting for justice.
We don't have the feeling that the government itself is ready and willing to punish its element. We have witnessed that with the Ngarbu case, which up till now is still pending before the court. The government should hold these officers accountable and make sure that they face the law and that severe sanctions should be meted on them. It's not permitted during a war period that human rights should be violated or that you should kill innocent civilians.
Cameroon's military stormed Ngarbu, a northwestern village, in February 2020, killing 21 civilians. Authorities initially denied that troops committed the massacre, calling the accusation separatist propaganda. But after international pressure, Cameroon authorities admitted troops were responsible. Joseph Vincent Tuda Ebode is a conflict resolution specialist at the University of Yaoundé.
C'est une réponse mal placée. D'abord, les forces de défense représentent l'État.
He says it is surprising that Cameroon's military, which prides itself on high-quality training and respect for human rights, opened fire on unarmed civilians. Ebode says the abuse has scared many civilians from helping government troops by sharing information on separatist activities. He says if the military does not bring arrested troops to justice immediately, civilians may even begin sympathizing with separatists who claim they are protecting English-speaking Cameroonians from military brutality. Rights groups have accused both Cameroon's military and Anglophone separatists of killing civilians and torching their homes during the five-year conflict. Both sides reject the accusations as intended to tarnish their image. Unrest in Cameroon's English-speaking western regions began in 2016 after teachers and lawyers protested the dominance of French speakers in the officially bilingual country. The military responded with a crackdown, and rebels took up arms, saying they had to defend the minority English speakers. The UN says clashes between the two sides have left at least 3,300 people dead and more than 750,000 internally displaced. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiyas Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, and our engineer, Vasco Volarech, thanks again for tuning for the Voice of America.